Welcome to the Analytics Dynasty Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara, diving into the running back position here, week 14. Head into the playoffs. Again, keep managing your roster all the way through. Keep taking those edges, and we'll talk about all positions here going around the NFL. Dallas, with Pollard out, 64% of snaps for Zeke, 12 for 45, a 64.2 PFF grade. That's okay. Okay, not great, not good, probably. I think that the notable thing here, 30 routes for him. He goes one catch for 15 yards. And then you look for Corey Clement. He's the backup here in this situation. He's basically up 36%, so it's a two-third, one-third split. Clement, 13 for 44, actually out carries Zeke in this game, but only runs 10 routes. He goes 1 for 2 through the air. So you get the idea. It's Zeke for the bigger roles. It's Zeke in the passing game. It's Zeke with the upside, but you still get this two-third, one-third split. I think Komet, in the event that there's an actual injury to Zeke and Pollard's out, like, start up the band, Komet, because there's not a ton there after him. All right, Dalvin Cook went absolutely berserk on the Steelers defense. He goes north of 250 on 2 touchdowns, 20 routes. Madison, 6 for 27, 5 routes, 1 target, and didn't catch any balls. I'll say this. There are guys in this position who can absolutely be spot starts, can be flex-worthy considerations when their starter is actually starting. Right, so start running back A is in. Running back B, who would normally be a clear injury away, clear human hand grenade, in some cases that B guy is actually playable. In the case of Alexander Madison, that is not the case. So I don't play him unless Dalvin Cook is out, and when Dalvin Cook is out, he's an automatic play. He's the absolutely bimodal running back too. So it's a very clear cut, and I think that this is a good prior for us to lean on in terms of what we saw in this game, even though there's some thought like, hey, maybe they'll be light on him or whatnot, you know, short week, yada yada. Nope, it just absolutely hammered down, north of 20 carries, 205, where he just went huge volume. That should be something that we think about, right? And so if we ever have the desire to sort of flex Madison, just remember it's a bad idea. Unless Dalvin Cook is not playing. Alvin Kamara, 27 for a 120 and 1 touchdown, 8 forced missed tackles. It's awesome. 18 routes, 5 targets, 4 receptions, 25 yards. Tony Jones with Mark Ingram out on COVID. Ingram's going to be pushing week 15. It's going to be a tight. Again, no Kamara at this point. No Kamara injury, it doesn't look like. So shouldn't probably be a situation where Tony Jones is going to be spot starting in week 15. That said, I do think he's one of the interesting ones of, hey, he could potentially be a guy next year. And again, I talked about this in a show over the weekend, thinking about guys, like thinking about who this year's Xavier Jones is. We're probably not going to pick it. Like, I'm being totally honest with you, we're probably not going to know. But if we take more shots at it, maybe we'll accidentally fall into it. I mean, there's a difference there in terms of, you know, can we say who it's going to be? No, it took 2 injuries to make Xavier Jones a thing. It took them not drafting anyone. It took them, you know, all these things. It actually, yeah, I mean, it took them 2 injuries, and then he himself got injured. But you sort of get the idea. Like, it's not something that we can sort of predict. That said, some of these are closer calls, right? I mean, Tony Jones, if Ingram walks in free agency, if they don't bring him back, all of a sudden he faces an injury away situation right there. So he's one that I think I would typically be like, hey, cut him. I don't think, like, I would rather keep Tony Jones in this situation than I would a guy from Pittsburgh, because I don't think I'm going to get the Pittsburgh one right in season, and who the hell knows what's going to happen out of season. I think the situation for Tony Jones to be valuable in, well, I don't know, let's call it 8 months, is much clearer and much closer to us. So just for what that's worth. Okay, turning next to the Detroit Lions. Get a good dosage of Craig Reynolds, which wouldn't have been where I was going to put my money. Jamar Jefferson. And this is maybe the thing about investing in running back 3s, honestly. Like, even if they're late in the, and maybe this is a McNichols thing, right? This is, we could sort of use this thread multiple times over this season, but we sort of have the guy who we think's the third, and then all of a sudden he's not at all the third. And whether that's, you know, for what purposes, or they just didn't view him as that guy or whatever. But Jamar Jefferson isn't the guy that gets the lead work. It's actually Craig Reynolds comes in. He's a preseason guy with them. That was primarily his work. And it's him this week. 11 carries, 83 yards, and a pretty good PFF grade of 85.8. So that's a really good number. He forces four missed tackles, 6.5 yards after contact per attempt. So that's, you know, that's excellent on those numbers. Then you look at Iggy, Godwin Igwabuki. He goes 8 for 25 on the ground. Like, that's okay. He loses a fumble. That's not great. I actually saw that there was another fumble too that he was involved with. PFF's only grading him with one fumble. I thought that maybe he had himself a second one. Maybe he was ruled down by contact or something like that. But it is actually Igwabuki who gets 17 routes to 15 for Reynolds. So a disappointment, honestly, in the Igwabuki workload. I was hoping for more, and I think Reynolds is an interesting add this week. And as we see here going forward with some of these injuries here, I think Swift potentially out for the year. It's kind of how it's tracking, and we'll watch for that. Hopefully Jamal Williams gets spot starts here down the stretch as well. He is dealing with his own COVID placement, so at this point, you know, we're probably questionable at best for week 15. So maybe it's a week 16, week 17. You know, two spot starts in the playoffs. Like, there's worse situations, but we just hope that he's healthy and in condition and all those things heading into those times when we need him. It's going to be tough to pull that trigger without seeing him come back, you know, knowing how he's doing off the COVID list. All right, turning to Cleveland, and there's some good, interesting news here. Not good news, but interesting news. 66% snap share for Nick Chubb. That's the highest of the season. 17 for 59. He goes 3 for 6 through the air. 17 routes. That's the high on the team. 8 routes for Kareem Hunt. Only plays 20% of the snaps. Goes out with an injury. Looks like he's probably on the doubtful side of questionable this week. D'Ernest Johnson, you're one injury away. Nick Chubb looks healthy. That said, if this is an extended absence for Kareem Hunt, D'Ernest Johnson could be potentially a spot starter here in the playoffs if something happens to Nick Chubb. Again, with all the COVID stuff, lock D'Ernest Johnson up. Right, this is the time to absolutely lock him up. He was actually graded really well, too, above 90, one of the best PFF grades of the week. All right, turning to the Green Bay Packers, and I think it's notable that in the last three games that A.J. Dillon and Aaron Jones have played together, it has been A.J. Dillon that has out-snapped Aaron Jones. This week, 15 carries for A.J. Dillon, only 5 for Aaron Jones. 71 yards rushing for A.J. Dillon. It's Aaron Jones that gets that goal line touchdown, which is nice when you look at the routes. Again, Aaron Jones taking 20 to 10 for Dillon. This is interesting in the sense of it is drifting into a more of a committee centric approach. So it's absolutely taken some of the top off of Aaron Jones. He's running back 15 in terms of points per game on the season. Not great, especially when you get 27. Like, those things hurt. I will say he wasn't overpriced. He was sort of priced almost in that range this offseason. So there was a little bit of discounting already occurring with him. But man, A.J. Dillon in a stretch run here could really, really be a difference maker down the stretch. So if something were to happen to Aaron Jones, again, if they're not, I think they're both probably startable in the running back two landscape. All right, Kansas City, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, two rushing touchdowns. He goes 10 for 37 on the ground, 2 for 8 for Darrell Williams. No rushing touchdowns, but it's 13 routes for Darrell Williams, 9 for Clyde Edwards-Helaire. This is absolutely a split situation at this point. And it's probably, like, it has been enough to help Darrell Williams be a flex play, but it's almost entirely been touchdown dependent or like a big play in the passing game necessary to sort of get him over into double digits. So I would be tepid there. He's an option for you, but I would be tepid in the event that there is an injury to either one of these guys. Full go, blast away. Derek Gore played a bunch in this game, but it's actually more so he was buried because they got up huge and they just pounded, absolutely pounded Vegas in this game. So that's really what it was more than anything else. All right, Tampa Bay and Clyde. We had Clyde Edwards-Helaire again, a name that we kind of liked more than I think the market does, but it's Leonard Fournette with Tampa. Absolutely crushing it in terms of goes over 100 yards, almost 6 yards per carry, beating up that Buffalo defense. Yeah, I thought Buffalo was just going to like lay over and just take it all game. Like it was just a brutal performance early. They came back later on, you know, performed pretty well in the pass defense, but Fournette goes over 100 yards. Three forced missed tackles, 31 routes he ran to only 4 for Ronald Jones. He goes 4 for 19. Giovanni Bernard banged up as well. So I think this is definitely one of those situations where, like, you every week start Leonard Fournette. The name of people that you start over Leonard Fournette in any given week is, well, I think it's Jonathan Taylor and maybe, like, Najee Harris. Like, it ain't 5, right? So, I mean, I honestly don't know at this point who I trust more in terms of the running back position than Leonard Fournette. Now, of course, that will mean Leonard Fournette will, something will happen and I will have jinxed him. But that said, like just in terms of lineup decisions, like he's absolutely starting him over Barkley. He's running back 3 in terms of points right now. And that's in points, total points per game. You know, when you come down, or excuse me, total points, when you come down to some points per game stuff, you do get Derrick Henry, obviously above him, but only played 8 games. Kamara's ahead of him, but only played 9. So, you know, it's Taylor, Henry, Eckler, Kamara, and Fournette. After him, Najee Harris, Dalvin Cook's after him. But again, I don't feel great about that. I don't feel as good about mixing. Like it's like absolutely a clear tier break to me after Fournette in terms of level of comfort. So in lineups, I think every week, like you would have to have literally, I think you would have to have Jonathan Taylor, Eckler, and you know, somebody else on a really unbelievable matchup, you know, facing the Jets at home as a 2-touchdown favorite, you know, that sort of thing. Like, you know, you get, you know, Jonathan Taylor clone that does that, right? Maybe that's when you do it, but you get the idea. Fournette is in every lineup. Ronald Jones playing sparingly, we'll see here, but this is consolidating absolutely to Fournette. And if you said, like, by the time this whole thing is done, could Fournette actually, he's at 241 right now. He is, and that's, he's 9/10 of a point ahead of Najee Harris. That's running back 3 on the entire season. You know, could you envision a scenario where he actually catches Eckler if Eckler misses time? You could put Fournette on the board at running back 2. You could tell me that right now. He's down 30, call it just about 39 points. If something were to happen to Eckler, like this job is so consolidated in a way that Fournette could absolutely catch Eckler and be the running back 2 overall on the season if this thing holds. Leader in receptions on the entire season at the running back position, you guessed it, Leonard Fournette at 62. So anyone ever tells you again that they know what's going to happen in terms of this player can't catch or any of that stuff, total bogus. Don't believe them. Don't believe those the people that, you know, the charlatans that tell you that these guys can't do something, right? Just because they haven't doesn't mean they can't. And that is a huge thing to think about when you evaluate these guys. Leave open on both sides to ranges of outcomes that we don't necessarily appreciate. But especially if we don't have firm evidence they can't do it, don't assume they can't. Just assume that they haven't yet. All right, Tennessee. It's Foreman, it's Hilliard. McNichols came in 3rd. Foreman was in on the first drive. Hilliard was on the his first touch was on the second drive. All of McNichols' work came when they were up 3 scores. So you sort of get the idea. It's Foreman is like your running back 2 type projection, I would think, on a weekly basis. Probably lower end too, honestly, at this point. Hilliard, I would have a hard time trusting in lineups, and I think McNichols is probably a cut at this particular point. So he's probably not. When I say that he's probably not, what I mean is he probably should be, but I would continue to stash him because of the COVID stuff, right? Consolidate. Running back 3s have a ton of value right now because if something goes horrible, you can put him in a lineup. So, but just know that he's absolutely buried. And even though the snap share looks relatively close, he is buried behind these 2 other guys. All right, Atlanta, this is a total weird situation. So 16 for 58 and a touchdown for Cordarrelle Patterson, 11 routes, two catches, 1 yard on four targets. Mike Davis, 11 for 44 on the ground. He goes six targets, five receptions, 42 yards on 16 routes. So, yes, the 220-plus pound running back is leading in routes, while the converted wide receiver is actually leading in carries and not routes. So if you guess that, you win. It's like the, you know, if the Kevin Malone line of if someone offers you 10,000 to one on anything, you take it. This is the absolute situation with that situation. Again, I think Patterson's in lineups more as a running back two, wide receiver two-ish range now. I don't think he's got that same ceiling just because you got Davis running some of the routes. I think some of that's injury related, and they may be trying to preserve him a little bit too. All right, the Patriots, they were on a bye. We're awaiting the Damian Harris return news. It's, I think, really critical this week. I think if he's not going to play, I think you're playing Ramondre Stevenson way up there at the position. Again, with some of these injuries and stuff, like Ramondre Stevenson could be unreasonably high at the position. So if it feels like, geez, like we're getting to, like Damian Harris isn't going to play, and all of a sudden you look down and you're like, man, like Ramondre Stevenson's actually like a top 12 to 15 guy, like maybe even a little bit higher than that, depending on how some of these things sort out. Like, yeah, like we could be in that situation, even though we haven't been there yet. This is where you get a little bit uncomfortable doing that. I understand that. But sort of trust your process on that, because like if there's no Harris, he's going to deserve it, even though it's going to feel a little bit awkward. And then if Harris comes back, they're probably both running back two type landscapes. I'd probably say at this point, just because Stevenson's healthier, I'd probably, if I had to pick between the two, I'd probably play Stevenson over Harris, in that running back two type landscape. All right, Vegas and Josh Jacobs, four catches per game, seventh at the position, 9 for 24, a dismal 37.2 PFF grade, but he runs 30 routes, six targets, so targeted on 20% of his routes, which is actually really good. Five receptions, 46 yards. So everything's consolidated towards Josh Jacobs. That said, he hasn't cracked 500 yards rushing on the season, which when you think about, given where he came from and everything that was said about his profile, is incredible that he is firmly in the running back two landscape. He's at 14.9 points per game. That puts him... You have to do a little bit of balancing with these guys when you sort of take that number. Basically everyone ahead of him has played at or pretty close to the same amount of games that he has. And he's tiered within, we'll call it a point, about a point. And he's basically within a point, we'll say, of running back 13. In terms of points per game. So you get the idea. It's really tight in that range. He's at 14.9. Running back 13 is 15.7. So 0.8 of a point. And when you look on the entire season, again, a little bit of aggregation going on. You sort of add up all those games in that range. It looks okay. Same range though. Running back 17. Again, as a running back two, you take it. And I think this is one, like if you came in and told me Josh Jacobs is going to have less than 50 yards a game, you would have been like, oh man, like we're really like Tim Boyle starting level screwed. And it honestly hasn't been that. So like you take the 15 points per game and you're like, ha, this isn't what we anticipated, but hey, it could be worse. Like it could be this could be a situation where you get like a Fournette type second half to that career, and where he's doing, maybe the situation's better and he's doing both in a way that we didn't necessarily see early on or consolidated. Like, I think you still have to think in those ranges of outcomes for Josh Jacobs. So I am not writing him off. This is actually checking a box in terms of everything that has gone wrong, right? If you told me of all the things that could have gone wrong in Vegas this year, with the only thing they haven't had is a betting scandal, right? The coach getting fired for all the shit that he did. You had someone literally kill somebody with a car, right? The only thing that they didn't have in terms of Vegas stuff is a gambling scandal. So it's only week 14. We still have time, but that's the level of which they're their team has been on. And if you told me through all of that that Josh Jacobs would set a career high and be close to top five at the position in receiving, they're like, all right, like this thing didn't turn out as bad as you would have thought, right? So just sort of keep that in mind when everything's going to hell in a handbasket. Jacobs is actually showing us what we thought he was to begin with. And again, now we sort of have it, and this is the interesting part about him. Again, we could talk all day about Josh Jacobs, but he's going to be a three-hit guy, assuming he stays healthy. He'll be a three-hit guy, and he'll probably be a three-hit guy, and it's going to be close to being a running back one this year. Like he's right in that range where it could be possible, especially if you get guys like Swift falling out, you know, Henry. Like he's going to be sort of approaching those. He's going to be catching those guys in terms of points. They're going to be falling back. He's going to be catching them. It'll be close. It'll be really. It could be really close ultimately. And when you look, you know, he's played less games. In terms of him getting there, all that said, like you just again, if you just had just taken the profile, three hits to start, like that's an excellent return on investment for what you did in a rookie draft. Like that's outstanding. Considering that you probably passed on N'Keal Harry for him, it's an outstanding start to his career. So could talk a ton about Josh Jacobs, but you take this, right? With all the bad, you take it. You take it. And again, that safety, look, these profiles show up, right? And what do we say? You know, it's profiles over players, right? We're not as, you know, we have a really hard time picking these situations. And ultimately, the situations, the patterns reappear, and this is one of them. All right, Baltimore, it's absolutely a Devontae Freeman job. Latavius Murray, this is incredible. Latavius Murray gets one touch, 1 yard touchdown. So literally, if you were scoring at home, 6.1 points, a rushing touchdown and a yard, and that's it. It's a total, and Devontae Freeman with just an all-timer line in terms of fantasy, 5 targets, 5 receptions, 8 yards. So just on that alone, 5.8. That makes up for the Latavius Murray touchdown. You got to love fantasy. He gets 8 yards and we get 5.8 points out of it, you know, in an all-time inefficient effort at the receiving in the receiving game on 31 routes. He gets 8 yards, 5 targets. You get 5.8 points. You got to love PPR. 64 yards rushing. So again, double-digit points. Just like he's sort of in that range. He's like a basically like a Jacobs level, just a little bit like a lesser Jacobs producer. He'll take it. All right, San Francisco, we're watching Elijah Mitchell, Jeff Wilson, the only running back with carrying the ball. Hasty was not really involved. Debo is basically a running back at this point. I think if Elijah Mitchell comes back, you feel good about playing him. You feel less confident playing Jeff Wilson, for what that's worth. By the way, I am recording this. It is just after 4 o'clock Monday. If I am going to post this right after I finish. So if you're catching this on a ride home or anything, Chase Edmonds was not activated for this game. So on Monday night. So if you have a pivot option, I mean, take it. If you don't, you probably don't at this point, but, you know, Mekhi Sargent, maybe someone like that is a potential guy that you can put in there, at a deeper level, Eno Benjamin, but you probably without options at this point. You know, maybe take a flyer on Mekhi Sargent, something like that. Or, yeah, that's the best I probably have for you. The other one that you could do is you could go, by the way, Tyler Higbee. Like I'm getting totally sidetracked, but Tyler Higbee ended up on IR as well. Just thinking about this in the process of it. You could go and you could get the backup tight end for, you know, assuming you got flex viability with that spot, which you should be doing. You could potentially go out and get like a guy like Bryson Hopkins, maybe. I mean, I'm sorry, I don't have much better news for you than that at this point, but that's an option that you could take. Okay, Pittsburgh, Najee Harris, like, and I don't trust any of the backups. That's all you need to know. I just touched on Arizona with Chase Edmonds being inactive. It's James Conner. They're playing on Monday night. Carolina, snap share, 59% Ameer Abdullah, 39% Chuba Hubbard. I'll say this. I don't necessarily think that that is indicative of future performance. They got down. Chuba Hubbard was the entire first series, the first half and second half, right? He really played, and then they got behind, and it was, you know, this horrendous offensive situation that they have. It's really bad in terms of Cam and PJ Walker, and it's like, it's comical at this point. Like, just again, fix the damn issue instead of whatever you're doing now. Just, like, you know, it's clear that Cam Newton's not the salvation, right? Like, I don't know. It's just, this wouldn't be how I'd go about it. And I think it's a good lesson for your fantasy teams as well. Don't go about it like this. But Chuba Hubbard, in games that are, I think you get, like, good game script, this could be a situation where you could actually trust him to get some volume. Again, he played, he out-carries Abdullah. Abdullah goes 60-40, basically, in snap share, and sees 22 routes to 8 for Chuba Hubbard. But Hubbard does score. Again, he is running some routes, but it is really Abdullah that's doing, like, the passing game, sort of hurry up, you know, throwing offense type of work, if you will. I still think, like, in a normal game, that Chuba Hubbard's probably going to outscore Amir Abdullah. All right, Denver, and with the return of Melvin Gordon. Melvin Gordon a little bit banged up in this one, so he has, like, some sort of finger injury. I think that's something we're going to have to keep an eye on. Not entirely clear the deal here. These two guys just kick it. And, you know, this is one of those things where I think the most responsible thing that I can do as a content provider for you, and for the fact that you come to me and subscribe and sort of, you know, ask me to do the work and all these, you know, and to try and give advice and try to help you through some of these processes, I think the best thing that I can do is be super honest with you, right? When I don't know, I won't know, and super careful. And typically the way that I'm careful is I would rather let everyone else take the more risky or expensive bet when I can't say that I feel that confident in it, right? That bet may be right ultimately, but I feel like it's too expensive. And of all the things, and I don't know if that's why that is that I feel confident in that, if it's prior job or, you know, I don't like to miss that way, or that's just not who I am typically, you know, unless I'm riding my bike down a hill, right? Like, I'm typically not the guy that takes a huge risky bet to be like, hey, I can pay off. Like, I don't understand crypto. I'm not making a crypto investment, right? Like, all of those things. Like, that's just not who I am generally. Again, unless I'm doing something, you know, that's physically fun, I guess, in a riding my bike scenario. But other than that, I'm not typically this really aggressive, risky, you know, decision-making process, unless it's just totally my own risk, essentially, unless all the risk is internalized. And that's something I'm comfortable with. This is one of those situations where I felt really strongly about this, that Melvin Gordon wasn't going away, and that people wanted to put Javonte Williams up with you know, like Swift and Harris and JT. And listen, like, and honestly, like, if you told me, like, hey, you had to take, because, like, here's where Analytics of Dynasty can come into play, right? Because even if Melvin Gordon, like, so Melvin Gordon goes 24 for 111 and 2 touchdowns in this game. Javonte Williams goes 15 for 73 and 1. So Javonte Williams has the big game last week, running back 1 performance, and at the same time, Melvin Gordon comes back and outperforms him this week. Okay, so you have that issue, right? And even if Melvin Gordon, like, retired tomorrow, that's not to say that Javonte Williams is going to get all the way free into next year. And listen, I've played a while, right? Like, I've played long enough to know that we see these patterns and they reappear, which is guys like Javonte Williams, guys like almost anybody. Like, we could talk about all of these guys. You don't just get all the way through. I mean, we had concerns about JT with Marlon Mack this year, right? I mean, we had these concerns. And so just to assume that he's going to get all the way through, I think it's a bad bet. And it always was a bad bet at that cost. So, you know, people taking, you know, putting him ahead of Christian McCaffrey, just anointing him. Like, anytime that happens, like, we sort of know that that's the right bet, is to be on the opposite side of that. Again, that's a little bit of my hesitancy, and I'll do this in a future pod about Pitts. It's a little bit of the same thing, because when you actually look at his comps, it's not certainty, which is what everyone's giving it to you. And there are other bets that I think are higher confidence bets because you've seen it multiple years. So it's one of those things with Williams that I think it's again, a reminder that we have to be cautious on making these huge bets about, you know, anointing these guys the next player. Because guys like Melvin Gordon don't just go away. And he outgrades him in PFF grade. They both force 6 missed tackles, which again, on 39 carries, they've broke 12 tackles. They're really tough. And honestly, I wouldn't want to play him in the playoffs, honestly, with that running game. But I just think it warrants mentioning, like, you have to be really careful until someone actually has a job and proves it to you that they actually belong there. Like, you have to be careful about anointing them. But once they sort of do it, you have to either embrace it and lean into it and compete, or it's not for long. So just some thoughts there. All right. Again, I think you starting both as like running back 2 type landscapes. I think you feel fine going forward doing that. All right. The Giants and Saquon Barkley with a notable performance here actually goes over 60 yards. So it goes 64 yards. It only took the league's worst rushing defense to allow that to happen. 16 carries, 64 yards, so that's good. It is actually Devontae Booker who goes 8 for 56, outgrades Saquon Barkley in PFF grade. Again, this is like the running back version of – it's like the flip side version of Hunter Renfrow. Hunter Renfrow, all he does is produce. All everyone thinks he's not athletic enough or whatever. All Saquon Barkley does is not produce to the level that he should. And we're like, there's got to be more there. There's got to be more there. There's got to be more there. I just keep thinking about Billy Bean in Moneyball. That said, 3 for 31, 17 routes, really good. 1.82 yards per route run. So you'll totally take that. Him and Booker split receiving work in terms of routes run. I mean, where are we going with this situation? That's just... I don't know. I have a lot of concerns, and shopping Saquon Barkley early in the offseason, I think, is going to be a classic ARB opportunity before other people catch up to it. All right. I'm not just going to bail, but I think if I can get top 8 running back price for it, which I think at some point I will, because people won't be able to help themselves, I think I'm going to do it. Next up, Chicago Bears, and I needed like an outrageous performance from Montgomery and Adams. I got the Adams perspective. I didn't get the Montgomery one, although he was good enough to like keep me like I'm competing for a league title in terms of points. I'm in the playoffs. I won't get a bye, but if I can win all the points, I get like a percentage of the prize pool, which is like not insignificant. So I'm rooting for like 62 points from Murray and Stafford. I'm down 62 with those guys versus Odell. So I need big performances from everyone but Odell in the passing game tonight. So that's the rooting interest. But anyways, Montgomery goes 10 for 42. Like, that's fine. Like, this game goes up and down. It's crazy, just all over the place. I was like, either 45 points scored in a quarter? I was like, that's got to be a record. I don't know if it actually was. I didn't look it up, but it moved awfully fast. The ball's moving all over the place. So really interesting there. 32 routes for Montgomery, 3 for Khalil Herbert, 5 for D-Will, so Damian Williams. I think the clearest thing, it's a unclear situation, right? This is Montgomery's lead job, and it's unclear behind him, I think, is probably the thing. I thought Herbert, like Williams and Herbert, now splitting work. I know Williams was a little bit, I think he had COVID or got banged up, but he was out for a period, and now... now he's back, and it's a little bit of a cluster. So this is a situation I felt better about 2 weeks ago than I feel about now in terms of getting a spot start. But hopefully Monty gets all the way through. Okay, next up, Joe Mixon. There was questions and concerns about whether he would play. He plays 18 for 58. He actually runs 15 routes to 22 for Samaje Perine. So Samaje Perine goes my birthday, 4 receptions, 22 yards, and then he goes 4 carries for 11 yards as well. So he actually basically 7 or 8 points there. Mixon on the disappointing aspect as well in terms of his rushing stats, and he goes 2 for 10 through the air. But listen, this is a situation, like, I think we kind of know what it is, which is, and when it's good, it's definitely mixing. And he's been really good this year too. And you know, this is like his first game without, the past two games he's been held under 60 yards. He'd before that been basically up over 100. He kind of goes through these stretches of they'll be good, then they'll be bad. It's kind of been a little bit of a trough right now. Hopefully we'll get some uptick here as the rest of the season rolls forward. But you feel enough involvement. Again, if he falls in for a touchdown, right, you're probably going to be in the mid-double digits, you know, in the mid-teens and sort of be fine with it. And he's got two receiving touchdowns on the year. He's got 28 catches. So, again, even when you think about that, like compare that to where a guy like Jacobs is at, just in terms of pacing, it's interesting the difference how we think about those two guys and where they're at this point. Philly's on a bye, so we'll be watching for all the injuries settling out in that situation. Penny, career day, 16, 137, and two touchdowns for Seattle. He had a 77 PFF grade, 13 routes. He goes one for a yard. Collins, the same, one for a yard with six routes. Dallas with eight routes, and he gets blanked through the air. So it's basically Penny gets half of the workload through the air in terms of routes. The other guys chop it. And 16 carries, 137, and two touchdowns for Penny. Do I trust it for next week? No way. I don't trust this backfield at all. Like, you could tell me that they could sign TJ Yeldon and run him out there for 23 carries, and it wouldn't surprise me next week. All right, Jacksonville, and this is a total cluster. So 6 for 4 for James Robinson, 1 for 2 for Carlos Hyde, 22 routes for Robinson. He's still clearly the guy, just zero involvement. So if you took a .4 in your lineup, my bad. I feel sorry for you. Carlos Hyde did get a catch in 6 yards. This is a total wasteland, this team. So just maybe, I don't know, maybe they can move him to London and leave Urban Meyer in one of the islands there off the coast of Canada on the way. All right, the Jets. Michael Piran gets some work here. He goes 7 for 28. He runs 8 routes. Ty Johnson, 6 for 17, 36 routes, 7 targets, 4 receptions, 40 yards. You think, all right, like, hey, basically 9.7 points. That's pretty good. 3 drops. So 7 targets, 4 receptions, 3 drops. So you'll take it. You want more, right? There is more there. And I think he's always been the guy that hey, if there's a guy that's going to be productive, it is probably going to be Ty Johnson, because it'll mean he'll have consolidated both a receiving role and probably have a high level running role. Like, that's would be how he projects, and it's kind of where he's at, right? You know, you're getting essentially, 3/4 of the work through the air. Half of the rushing stuff just didn't really turn out here. So I do think he's interesting as you sort of get Tevin Coleman and Michael Carter back. You know, Michael Carter's still, I believe, going to be out another week. So this might be another spot start opportunity for Ty Johnson. So we'll see here how that goes. All right, Houston, Burkhead with a groin injury in this game. David Johnson's on the COVID list. Royce Freeman could be a spot start. So I think that's interesting. Again, if you are looking for a spot start here, I think Royce Freeman, if you have fab money left, I mean, I think you got to guard against the other teams there. All right, Miami, they're on a bye. Gaskin's on COVID. Philip Lindsay's on COVID. Everyone's on COVID. Duke Johnson would be my ad. I think Duke Johnson, I kind of know what he is. And so he would be my, like, the ability to go both ways in terms of receiving and rushing if you need it. We'll see how that ultimately works. But I think, like, he's one that's an interesting spot start. And again, he could perform well in a couple of weeks and then be valuable for next year as well. Buffalo Moss is inactive. They literally didn't rush the ball with a running back in the first half. So for what that's worth, I just don't think you could play any of the running backs there. Next up was the Chargers. As I am literally speaking this, I'm getting push notifications on Twitter that Rashawn Slater has gone on COVID list. So I think you got to watch this entire situation about what's going on in the offense, and we'll see sort of who is, you know, tests are coming back, which isn't a good sign. Eckler, 46%, 28% Jackson, 27% Kelly. Eckler gets banged up in this game, and the other guys chop. It's like exactly kind of what we thought would happen. Hopefully Eckler's back. There's some thought that he can play. It's a short return week. But Brandon Staley has been basically like, hey, like he just, like, it's fine. It's just being safe with him. Like, he's not hurt, whatever. We'll see. And I think we're going to have to watch earlier in the week. You know, I do think really focusing on this spot as a potential, if he's out situation, what can we see? Again, maybe there's a COVID situation and actually gets a clarified start. That's the crazy part about all of this. But I don't feel confident picking the guy. It's probably Justin Jackson's involved, probably Kelly. You know, if I had, like, if you had a gun to my head made me pick, it's probably going to be Jackson, but I don't feel good about it. All right. Last but not least, Washington football team. Gibson has a fumble, 10 for 36. He runs 27 routes out of 36 routes for the running back position. That's really good. Patterson and Jonathan Williams split touches in the week. Again, it's a minority role there, but again, that maybe goes away from some clarified injury away status. Again, we're waiting on see if McKissick's going to be back or whatnot, but this taking a little bit of the sail out of the Jarrett Patterson potentially injury away role. So, all right, well, that'll do it for this episode. Until next time, continue embracing the variance. We'll talk again very soon.